Today is a very special day, very special ep, I think, because how could Disney stuff not be special, right? It's all rainbows and cartoons and happiness and...
I would say so, except for like typical, a very special episodes. Those are generally not jolly good times. Those are usually about really sad stuff. You know what I'm talking about? Like
Is
a very
it?
Special episode of Step by Step that's like... My teacher,
oh no,
fucking killed himself or something. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
I guess that's true, huh?
Yeah.
I
or
guess
like, Dad, I'm sick. I think I'm real sick.
And the real bad sick. The no coming back from it sick.
Did you see the documentary on the Dana Carvey show? And that came out recently on Hulu. Oh, it's so funny. There's a segment where they're talking about the names that they would give each episode, and they give an example of how terrible they are by showing a bumper for their show, which starts with a bumper for Home Improvement, a very special episode. Dad, I don't want to die. We're going to get you through this, son. Followed by Mugs Diet Root Beer is a Dana Carvey show.
Fuck, dude. The Dana Carvey show was great.
It was,
he had such a good writing staff on that too.
Yeah, it was great. You should watch the documentary. Everybody should watch the documentary. It's great.
There you go. That's the recommendation of the episode.
Sponsored by Hulu,
and now sponsored by Disney. This is the truly though. This is special episode of the Clear Cash Podcast, the Disney episode, or I guess it's just the Disneyland episode.
So you went to Disneyland recently, right?
I did. I was there just 2 days ago, and we've talked about it briefly before, but me and you both, adult males,
yes,
who have a fondness for Disneyland.
I love Disneyland.
It's so great.
It's wonderful. It's a great place.
It is, and I feel like a lot of people growing up, once they reach the adult age, there's branching paths on how they begin to feel about Disneyland. You know, you could either be disillusioned or be fueled by nostalgia or begin to discover things about the park that things that make it great that you didn't realize or couldn't comprehend as a child. Or you have kids yourself and then you want them to experience the things that you felt when you weren't there as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And we both are on the similar path of enjoying Disneyland because it is a place in which stories are told in a very imaginative way, and a way that is, for me and I think you, from what we've already talked about, draws you in a way that goes beyond just surface value, you know?
Yeah.
Lore, really. The lore of Disneyland in particular, on the rides, stuff that exists in the park, in the lines, everything about it. There's a rich, literal, at times, gold mine, which I'll get into a bit later. It's a little hint, dropping a hint. But Disneyland has a very rich history of really interesting... a lot of it feels like trivia bits, you know, like something you would see on Jeopardy or something your weird uncle would tell you over a glass of wine on a Thanksgiving Eve or even on Thanksgiving.
What do you
mean by that? I just feel like, okay, for example, this is what I mean. There are things that are facts about the park, and speaking on Disneyland in particular, it exists for all the parks around the world. There's, I think, maybe five or six. But in each area and throughout its history, they contain these little tidbits of information, knowledge, just like one or two liners that sound fabricated or just wacky, you know. And for example, one in particular is there was actually, I don't know if you've ever heard about this, but there was a paper published by a doctor in, I think it was just last year actually, October 2016. About riding Big Thunder Mountain Railroad and how it helps you pass kidney stones.
What? I had not heard of that.
Yeah, so A doctor published a paper, and I'm gonna probably butcher this because I don't speak doctor language. But
English, or Japanese, or French.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna butcher this because I don't speak English. The paper is titled "Validation of a Functional Pilocalciol Renal Model for the Evaluation of Renal Calculi Passage While Riding a Roller Coaster." And what that means is they found through a study which involved using a 3D model of a kidney with kidney mm-hmm. stones in it. Mm-hmm. They put it on Thunder Mountain, and this was all with the permission of Disney.
They strap it in?
They strap that little kidney in, okay. probably in multiple cars, you know, front, back, middle, because they all move differently, I assume.
Yeah.
Different gravitational pull or whatever. And they found that 70% of the time that the kidney would pass the stones. Which
some
is
John K shit, yes. Some like Ren Stimpy shit.
It really is. And they tried this on other rides at Disneyland, and they couldn't replicate the that finding. So that in and of itself is such a bizarre thing. Huh. You know, that it's that's part of the it fits into the thing that I like about Disneyland the most, which is just its history is full of things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's obviously something that isn't hidden in the park. It's not part of the park, but it's just something that makes it, it just is interesting, you know, and it draws you to it.
Right.
And it all that also Big Thunder Mountain happens to be in my favorite part of the park, which is Frontierland and Critter Country, which I lump together. I view them as symbiotic in a way.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, they're right next to each other, and they're essentially the same thing. I mean, Critter Country is like backwoods wilderness stuff, and then Frontierland. And
it's literally like the backwoods of Disneyland, too.
No, it truly
like
is.
Wedged in the back.
And, like, no one really goes back there, because there's not much going on. Like, they have Splash Mountain, which is, like, at the top of Critter Country. But then you walk back, and it kind of gets, like, darker and weirder, and there's, like, people back there that maybe have been there more than one day, just like hiding.
The Winnie the Pooh ride's back there.
The Winnie the Pooh ride's back there, which is not a bad one.
There's like three rides in Critter Country. It's barely a country.
It's truly barely a country.
But I think it's a typo. I think it's Critter County.
Well, in the very back next to the Winnie the Pooh ride, they have Pooh Corner, which is a candy shop. I mean, come on. But yeah, they have it's a candy shop, and mm-hmm. it's the best candy shop in all of Disneyland, and I won't even get into a conversation with someone who says it isn't, because it is. Because
so this is interesting. This is interesting. There's Disneyland itself is a series of microcosms of lore, right? There's every land is its own lore setting, and then every ride and the areas around those rides each convey their own like elements of lore too. Right. Mm-hmm. And then there's also this lore around the reality of Disneyland, like Thunder Mountain can help you pass a kidney stone. There's like the history of the dangers of certain rides, like how somebody died on the like Haunted Mansion elevator, stuff like that. And then there's also the lore of, as a consumer, what you get out of certain sections of the ride. And Disneyland helps perpetuate that argument as well by segmenting content to specific regions of the park. Like you can go to this area and you can ask them for a secret like peanut butter and jelly smoothie, right? Or you can go to this area and you can get them to give you like a secret chili bowl,
right. And
if you want like the best thing, you have to go over to this particular, like realistically they could sell all that shit everywhere, but they don't, because they want to engage their audience in a way that makes them engage the park on like a meta level.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking on that in particular, so we had heard prior to this visit, we wanted to experience more of that. You know, we wanted to, you know, there's the hidden Mickey thing where right. there's hidden Mickey Mouse head and ears throughout various rides in the background. You really have to look for them. They're really, really hard to find. And obviously, there's online databases and threads where you can see lists of them and where to look, but that obviously takes the fun out of it. So me and Lauren, prior to this visit, decided that we wanted to be more aware of things like that. I mean, we know of the hidden Mickeys, but what else is there that is in the background? What is part of the lore? What exists that you have to look for? And one of the things that we heard about is that if you go to the Haunted Mansion and you find one of the employees, the cast members in there, in the foyer area of the Haunted Mansion, and you ask for a death certificate, that they'll give you one at the end of the ride with your name on it.
Right.
Unfortunately, it sounds like that turned out to be an internet rumor, because we asked for one and they were like, "Nah, internet rumor. Sorry." Okay. But maybe they only give it to like specific people. Maybe they can only do it once or twice a day. I don't know. But that one turned out to be a falsehood.
Okay. So another one, I mean, this is not quite as specific as that, but you can say to any cast member, it's your birthday or it's your anniversary, or there are a variety of different celebrations, and they'll give you a special pin that has that particular celebration printed on it, and they'll write your name on it. And then every time a cast member sees you, they tell you happy whatever.
They have to.
They have to, but they also, like, they don't seem to be faking it. Like,
no, they do mean it. For sure.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I know somebody who worked at Disneyland for 10 years and he loathed it. It was an awful experience for him. I'm not under the misguided conception that everybody who works at Disneyland is actually happy, but they certainly do succeed in perpetuating that myth in such a way that even as an adult, knowing that it's false, I still accept it.
Exactly.
Which is impressive.
Very much so. And the thing is like, with the way that the cast members themselves act, like, for the most part, I don't think, with the, you know, exception of maybe one or two times, I don't think I've ever had an interaction with someone who works at Disneyland where I felt like they weren't enjoying their job. You know, I've always felt like that, whether it be the cheery old guy that helps you get on the tram or, you know, the woman that gives you a churro, everyone is stoked all the time. And that definitely fits in with the...
Yeah, totally.
Environment. They're all cartoon characters, pretty much. They might not be dressed up as Pluto, but they might as well be. They act like it.
Do you know anybody who worked at Disneyland?
Briefly. I did have an acquaintance that, while I was friends with them, was a cast member. And they loved it. So I guess it varies from person to person.
Surely there's burnout, especially with the kinds of... like guests you're going to attract, I'm probably going to burn out on it.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it's rigorous, the focus on perpetuating the, you know, experience of joy.
Yeah.
It's very rigorous. And I've known people who work as the characters, and the character stuff is wild, dude. They're very intense people who play the characters. And the ones that I knew were super into it. And yeah, I think it just takes a kind of person, and their vetting process is very thorough, apparently.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. But we all have read horror stories online of the cast members who have had just awful experiences working there, and especially being a character, you know. I've heard it's pretty difficult. Yeah. Anyway, so I want to announce something I'm pretty happy about. This last trip I had was the first time I've actually found a hidden Mickey. I didn't find it myself. Lauren found it. Spoiler alert, I'm going to tell you where it is.
No.
I have to. I won't say exactly where it is, but it is in the Haunted Mansion, right?
I'm covering my ears.
That's all I'm saying. It was on the Haunted Mansion ride. In the latter half of that ride, which is not... Do you like the Haunted Mansion ride?
It's all right.
I feel like it's pretty weak, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, we usually go once a year, and we go during the holiday time, and they always have it as Nightmare Before Christmas during that time.
Oh.
And I think I definitely prefer it when it's not Nightmare Before Christmas.
For sure.
And it's just the old ghosties.
I'll tell you this much. My first job before I turned 16 was at Hot Topic. That was like the exact job I wanted, and I manifested it Jim Carrey style. Okay, but I have had enough Night Before Christmas to last yours and my lifetime forever. I'm so exhausted.
I know, dude. It's so bizarre that like it's become such a big deal with Disney. Like,
yeah,
Disneyland, especially during the holiday season, they turn pretty much it feels like all of New Orleans Square becomes Nightmare Before Christmas stuff.
You know what? That fucking sucks, dude, because New Orleans Square is so dope.
Yeah.
And Nightmare Before Christmas is so one note.
It truly is.
Wow, what a way to stomp on that. That sucks.
Do you... Okay, so is New Orleans Square your favorite part of area of Disneyland?
I don't know, man. I think my least favorite area of Disneyland, and this is tough because I like them all, is Tomorrowland.
Really? That's interesting.
It's a little generic. Some of the parts of Tomorrowland I really like, but it's so much more open than mm-hmm. the other spaces, and there's just not a lot of storytelling happening in that. I think we should get back to that, actually.
Storytelling in particular.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's get to that.
I love Main Street, USA. I love... what is it fucking called? It's called... it's not New Orleans Square. What is it called? What's that area called?
Where?
New Orleans.
It is. It's called New Orleans Square.
Is it really called New Orleans Square?
Yeah, next to... Like where Pirates of the Caribbean is?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called New Orleans Square.
Okay. Okay, seemed too obvious. Yeah. I love that as well. And I love Fantasyland, too.
Yeah.
And Frontier. You know what? I don't have a fucking favorite. You know what? Back off, Julian.
Okay, well, I have a favorite. So I figured that you had one. And we'll talk about my favorite at the end. Actually, I might have mentioned that my favorite already. I'm just going to say it again. It's Frontierland. I think I already mentioned that. But I want to talk more about that at the end. But let's focus right now on storytelling in particular at Disneyland and how it incorporates into the stories of the rides, because what maybe a lot of people might not realize is that each ride does have a backstory, which has changed throughout its existence since the 50s. Most of the bigger rides came around in the late 70s or mm-hmm. mid to late 70s. That's when we got like Space Mountain, Big Thunder Mountain. Those all came late 70s, early 80s. But you know, before then, Disneyland's already been there since the 50s. Mm-hmm. A huge history that it draws from.
And you can see the disparity too. I'm going to start by talking about why I don't like Tomorrowland as much as the others.
Okay.
Tomorrowland itself, not necessarily the rides in it.
Tomorrowland,
essentially a large open plaza, right, with rides kind of around it, and then it feeds into the theater area, and all of the structures around the plaza are basically, you know, pseudo futuristic looking structures, with they're fairly generic. They don't really imply anything. They just look futuristic. And some of the front facing rides, like the rocket ride and Imagineerium structure, or Imagineer structure, in which they now just have like Xbox Kinects and stuff like
that. Yeah, dude, I went in there. It's pretty sad. They're doing it's like Star Wars themed now, but like no one was in there. They had one room with five Xboxes in it playing Lego Star Wars.
That sucks.
It was such a bummer, honestly. And I don't want to distract too much from what we're talking about, but I will say that it's not great with where it's at now. And it was innovations for most of the late 90s and 2000s, I believe, which was all like an extension of the original retro future stuff that they were doing with the like the World of Tomorrow stuff.
I think they had at one point a fully 360 degree screen wrapping around a line going into that area, and they would show like F1 races from the first person perspective.
Yeah,
on it, that was fucking cool.
Yeah, but they did such cool stuff with that in that building, and now it's just been like Marvel stuff for a couple years, and then now it's just Star Wars stuff, and I'm just like not interested at all.
Yeah, so like the structural environmental storytelling in Tomorrowland is boring. Like there isn't any really. It's just themed. There's no storytelling happening.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Frontierland is a good example. You're walking around, you're seeing old fences, and you're seeing like footprints and stuff. You're seeing like old benches and stuff, and it looks lived in. It looks like it's been there for a long time.
Yeah,
there are touches to it. Fantasyland also has this too, because of the shops. You're in like, you know, some old like fairy tale town, and there's a little door down here, and it's like, who the hell lives down there? You're like 2 feet tall, and then there's
there's Mr. all Toad. Kinds of, That's where Mr.
there's
Toad
all
lives.
Kinds of like little touches that imply things, and Tomorrowland doesn't have any of that really. It just kind of looks like it's from the future.
Yeah. So do you think that's kind of an extension on Walt Disney's original approach? Because he was obviously heavily involved with the original creation of Disneyland. And Frontierland, for example, is one of the five original themed lands.
Mm-hmm.
And it originally didn't come with many attractions. Like, it didn't have any rides in it. It was more of just like a wilderness walk. Mm-hmm. And you could go there and like ride pack mules and stuff. But I think that obviously a lot of the stuff that you see there now is that original concept, obviously with rides now, but they draw from that original idea heavily, I think.
Totally. I mean, the initial concept must have been, and I guess we can only guess, or I can only guess because I haven't read like what he's thought about it.
Well, but I actually have a Walt Disney quote here.
I'll give it to
I wrote it down because he has little quotes on all of his lands, you know. And his quote on Frontierland is, "It is here that we experience the story of our country's past, the color, romance, and drama of frontier America as it developed from wilderness trails to roads, riverboats, railroads, and civilization. A tribute to the faith, courage, and ingenuity of our hardy pioneers who blazed the trails and made this progress possible.
Okay, so yeah, it's a romanticized vision of a particular space and time. I guess that's sort of true of everything. I mean, Main Street USA is a romanticized vision of like fucking like 1920s, 19 through 1950s America.
Yeah, exactly.
There, and I've been to places where I've thought this is Main Street USA from Disneyland.
Mm-hmm. So have I. Thornville, Ohio. Shout out to Thornville. It's basically Main Street USA from Disneyland.
And it's funny because that evocation is fucking tight. Like, I like having that memory of the simulation of America.
Yeah, absolutely.
The simulation is
mostly better than the real experience.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So yeah, anyway, like, I guess Disney's original vision was to evoke like a space, and I think that's successful. I think the thing that I like most about Disneyland is the evolution of that concept of, not only are we evoking a space, we are now implying a story here. And that's been more obvious the more that's been more obvious in each new ride. The newer the ride, the more story is told in the environment.
Right.
I think the only exception in my memory is Jungle Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my favorite part of Disneyland, is the environmental storytelling of the space that you're in.
Right.
It doesn't do anything to convince you that something's happened. You can just look around and see it. The Indiana Jones ride is probably the best example, because it implies that you are interacting in the story. So the Indiana Jones ride suggests that you're going down into a mine. You enter into a like an excavated cavern. It has, you know, like hanging which one, stalagmites hang?
Or... Oh, dude, I don't even... Stalactites? Stalagmites? It could
it's
be either.
It's got the rock things hanging.
Yeah.
It's got bamboo sticks holding up the ceiling. It rumbles periodically. You don't know what's going on. There are eyes on the ground, and there are signs saying, don't step on the eyes. You better watch out. And you go deeper in, and then it's a projection literally telling you, like, oh, man, look at all this stuff that we were able to do to get down here. It's crazy. We're going to go down the first time. This guy, oh, he went down there. He basically died.
Yeah.
Now you're
yeah.
going down there. You're crazy. That's fucking tight. And then you get down, you get on the ride, and the line has contributed to your experience. Just the environment has contributed to your experience of being on the ride.
Oh, totally. And you know, in that queue for that ride in particular is a great example of Disneyland and the environment imploring you to be as curious as possible and to mm-hmm. look out for these things. Because, mm-hmm. you know, when you're in that queue for the ride, there's moments where you come across, like, those bamboo poles that you just mentioned. And mm-hmm. there's a sign that says, don't touch these.
Mm-hmm.
But they're in reaching distance. I can easily touch them. So you touch them, and then there's a, you know, a fake rumble, and it simulates a collapse, you know, very mm-hmm. lightly. It doesn't frighten, but it simulates that.
Yeah, totally.
And that's a first and clear example of the environment telling you to look for these things and to try to open doors that may seem inaccessible. Obviously, you don't want to jump over guardrails and do anything sketchy, but there are areas in the park, especially in Fantasyland, I think more out of anywhere, that has areas that you don't even know exist, or doors that might seem inaccessible, and you pull on them and the door vibrates and you might hear a disembodied voice, you know?
Yeah, Toontown had a lot of that too.
Yeah, yeah.
Just definitely. Like everywhere in Toontown, you touched it, you looked in it, you pulled on it.
Something's gonna yank on you back. Tell you what. And fuck, dude, Toontown like is so underrated, and I don't know if it's like people just forget about it.
It's very like, well, it's very child oriented. I mean,
I guess that's true. Yeah.
I went there last time I was there. Went into like. Daffy Duck's boathouse and
Daffy Duck. Mickey's he's not Disney.
Oh shit! Don't you fucking tell Mickey I said that.
I'll beep both of us.
Okay, I went to Donald Duck's boathouse.
There you go.
He's got like a little hammock in there. He's got a picture of Daisy over it.
Mm-hmm.
It's well worn. You know that he's fucking looking at her all
dude,
the time.
It gets lonely right? out there on the sea.
Yeah, dude. And then you across the way, you got Mickey's house and Minnie's house next door. And it's like, hey, aren't they together? So I walked up to one of the attendees, and I was like, why do they live in separate houses? And she was like, well, Mickey and Minnie are dating, but they're not married yet.
Oh, like, hey, that's a good answer, actually.
Fair enough. yeah, man. Toontown is tight.
I love Toontown. I mean, obviously, I think I appreciate it the most when I was a kid. And I think it's been in a state of flux recently, because I think a lot of people, I mean, even myself, I was under the impression that they were getting rid of it because
they are.
Or are they really?
Yeah, they're replacing it with the Star Wars area.
No, okay, so that's what I originally thought, but they're actually not doing that.
What? That they said that they were.
I know. And maybe they changed their mind, or maybe they still are, but they're building Star Wars Land in a completely different area, and they've already started building it.
Oh, that's tight.
Yeah, so Toontown was very much still open as of 2 days ago, November 20th, 2017.
Okay, cool.
Because I was under the impression also that they were going to close it last year sometime, completely demolish it and put Star Wars Land there. But they're actually putting Star Wars Land in an area that's accessible from Frontierland. And I think the area that it's taking place or where it's going to be just used to be like back lot and parking lots.
Huh.
Not entirely sure, but I think that fits in with the geography of that area.
Okay.
So it's wild because you can see what they're building from areas in Frontierland, and it's going to be insane, dude. It's massive. And like, I'm not
a huge
Star Wars fan, but I'm pretty excited just from what I saw.
Well, here, let's talk about this. So the evolution of Disney rides, right? The initial Disney rides, you got like the submarine, you got the Family Robinson,
Swiss Family Treehouse,
and now the Tarzan Treehouse.
Yeah,
and then you got the Island in the Middle. What's that called?
Tom Sawyer's Island.
Yeah, Tom Sawyer's Island. Jungle Cruise, probably a pretty old ride.
Mm-hmm.
Talking out my ass here. It looks old.
No, dude, it's got to be. Yeah.
So, well, let's leave Jungle Cruise out of that for a second. So, those rides, the areas, there's no like, there's no magic to the lines, right? The submarine ride, you're just in a queue, straight up. There's nothing fancy going on there.
Yeah, no fucking fast pass for that either.
No. And then you get the Jungle Cruise and Haunted Mansion, and there's some environmental storytelling there that I really like. Haunted Mansion has so many graves, and they all have little stories on them. And I, in my opinion, the graves are better than the ride. They're like, they're uniquely funny.
Yeah,
they're sometimes sad. You know, there's a lot going on, and it's a very like nicely tended to graveyard too. Mm-hmm. Like it has really nice grass and like a particular kind of fine grass and flowers and stuff, and all of that stands alone as just very detailed environment. And then you move into like the Jungle Cruise and you're going through the line there. It's basically just a queue, but they have these sections that have old artifacts from previous adventures, right? And they all sort of imply something about the danger of the adventure that you're about to go on.
Yeah. They got like the butterflies preserved in glass. It's like very old school adventure, like what you'd seen in adventurer's office.
Totally. Yeah. And like old newspaper clippings and stuff like that, old photographs of safaris and shit. And then you move forward towards like Star Tours, and that's straight up telling you a story, right? You're standing in line, robots are talking to you about what you're doing. You got an X-ray machine looking at you, and Patrick Warburton's like, well, you look all right to go through here. And, hey, put that blaster away and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get into like Indiana Jones, then like you're fucking interacting with the line at that point. Star Wars is going to take that another step further. It's going to be like Sleep No More status, where when you stay at the hotel at Star Wars, you choose a story that you're going to live out, and then the staff lead you on a story through your stay of like, young Padawan, come with me, and you're going to slay Darth Vader too, and stuff like that.
That's wild. Yeah. That's taking the whole Path of the Jedi thing that they have in Tomorrowland and like straight up kicking it up to a 1,000%, it sounds like.
Yeah, they're fully embracing the interactive storytelling element, and I think that's fucking tight.
Yeah, that's so great. And I think that's something that's going to be super important to their future roadmap is interactive storytelling.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's definitely the future. And you can tell through the lineage of Disney rides that they see that too, and I'm super happy for it. And plus, another thing is the environments themselves, the lands themselves, have themed themed interactive things happening in them relative to where you are. So, like in New Orleans Town, is that what it's called?
New Orleans Square. New Orleans. It's New Orleans Town. Come on.
Yeah, New Orleans Town. They've got like jazz bands playing and stuff like that. Main Street USA, they've got marching bands and shit. And then in Fantasyland, when I was a kid, they had a Merlin who stood in front of the who would sometimes appear in front of the
Sword in the Stone.
The Sword in the Stone, the carousel.
Right.
And he'd be like, "Does anybody know of a young prince or princess who can help me get the sword out of here?" And he'd like come and talk to people, and you're like, "Hey, what's up, man? Like, this young man, he looks pretty like a pretty proud young man." And like, "Yeah, I know." And he talked to my sister, and he's like, "Oh, you look like a very strong princess, maybe it's you." And then he was like, "You young man, come up here." And he gestures at me, and I'm like, "Well, what's up he's like, "Come, please try." And I like get up on that stone, like, I'm pulling on that motherfucker, and I pull it out.
A vein on, like, your forehead. Yeah, you're sweating.
My 9-year-old forehead.
Yeah.
I was ripped too. My muscles were going nuts, dude.
Nice.
Yeah. So I pull it out, and he gives me like a plaque and like a fucking medal and stuff. And I, you know, that's not a ride. It just like happened.
Yeah. That's so tight. Great. Yeah. And that's that I think that is what, obviously, something me and you don't, I mean, pretty much thankfully. I mean, I don't think we want to either actively want to experience things like that again, because we're adults, and you know, those are mm-hmm. that's a experience for a child. But knowing mm-hmm. that that exists makes me happy.
It's, you know what, like I felt that way, and then my partner and I went to Disneyland, and we interacted with the characters, and they are like all about it, dude. Like, we talked to Cruella De Vil, and she was like, "Oh my god, like, you're beautiful. Look at you." To Alex, and then she was like talking her up, and then we took pictures with her, and she was like posing and stuff, and she was just having a conversation with us. And you've seen, there are like videos of like, I've seen a video recently of Captain America like doing sign language to a young guest.
Oh yeah, see, like it, yeah, shit like that is great.
Yeah, totally, dude.
And I don't, of course, I didn't mean to imply that I didn't want to interact with the characters, because I don't mind it, and I will. You know, like this past trip, we were got into a conversation with the Mad Hatter and Alice, and you know, we got the like the unbirthday thing, because obviously it wasn't our birthdays, so we got the whole unbirthday speech, and he was a nice guy, and he got a. The only thing that bothered me about him is he had the Mad Hatter fake nose on, and the prosthetic was really wonky looking. Not in a bad way that it looked bad, like it was a bad prosthetic, but just that like red steaming nose just unsettled me a bit. And he got really close to our faces, and he was like an older guy, like he got really into the character, and he's short, you know, because Mad Hatter's like a short little man. So he was like looking up at me and in my face, and then I swear like the nose kind of like touched my face a bit. It was weird, but you know, he was doing his good job, and the kid seemed to want to follow him and grab at his nose, so
yeah,
you know, he was doing something right. Can't fault him for that.
Yeah, man, they go all the way with the environmental storytelling, and I love it as much, if not more, than the rides.
Yeah, totally. And I wanted to ask you something. Have you ever gone down the rabbit hole of reading about all of the, not seedy, but kind of all of the things that have happened at Disneyland that are the ugly side? I'll say that much. Like, there's a Wikipedia article that I've gone through a few times past few years called Incidents at Disneyland, or Incidents at Disney Parks. And it's a complete list of all of the injuries, fatalities, crimes committed at Disneyland.
So I know a couple. From people telling me about them. I haven't sought them out though. I'll address that in a second. But so when I was in high school for senior year, our high school was a part of a larger thing where the senior class was sent to Disneyland for the night. Basically, you show up on a huge bus, and I'm from the Bay Area, so we bus down to Disneyland, and we'd appear at like, I don't know, 6 p.m. and then the park was open till 6 a.m. and you'd be there with your school or your senior class, and then the senior class of like four other high schools, and you just have the whole fucking park to yourself. And a couple of things happened. One of them was several of us brought drugs, obviously, and one of my peers told me about how her father was on Pirates of the Caribbean, and he was smoking weed on the ride on the boat. And as you're probably aware, there are people just hanging out in the shadows on the rides, like watching you.
Right.
And this happened to him. He got caught by one of the people on the rides, so they pulled him off the ride, and they took him to Disney's secret underground police station.
Disney jail.
Yeah, Disney jail.
With and rubber bars.
It's fucking underground.
Yeah.
And
well, they have a whole fucking tunnel system. That's how the cast members are able to get from one end to the other, is they have the complete underground network of tunnels that you can travel through to get to various parts of the park.
That kind of stuff is crazy.
Yeah.
And then there's that Banksy documentary, Exit Through the Gift Shop, where one of his Confederates gets taken to Disney jail as well.
Because they did the Guantanamo Bay stunt. Disneyland, right. Where they put two inflatable dolls dressed as Guantanamo Bay prisoners next to Big Thunder Mountain.
Right, that's right.
And of course, they ended up in Disney jail, and they had their knuckles beat with batons rubber batons.
Oh, okay.
No, they did not. They. I'm sure that they received fines and were in big trouble for that. Because you don't. One thing you don't do at Disneyland is fuck around at all. Because you will get prosecuted to the full extent of the law.
Do not break the illusion.
No. Okay. Do not at all. It's basically Westworld. If you fuck with the with anything beyond what you're allowed to do, you're toast. There was
Westworld you mentioned.
Yeah, Westworld. Came so to my mind. Anyway, there is an employee there a few years ago who I was actually there this day, which is really weird. This was in 2012, and I was there with my family, and there was an employee in the Toontown area who put some dry ice in a water bottle, shook it, threw it in the trash can. And we all know what happens when you do that. It explodes. Mm-hmm. This is obviously post 9/11, but pre all the bullshit that's gone down in recent years. So still, the atmosphere is very, you know, aware tense. Of these things. Tense, yes. So explosion happens in Toontown. They didn't evacuate the whole park. They evacuated the area, figured out it was just a dry ice bomb. That kid, young kid, probably in his early 20s, I think, got arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Never is allowed near Disneyland, served time in jail for it. Like, Disney will prosecute, make sure that you regret what you do. So don't fuck around at Disneyland, ever.
No way. That sucks. I mean, that was a stupid-ass thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that happened senior year was, so the park is open, you know, through the night. Everybody working there, probably not very happy about it. Everybody working there is like a kid also. So like they were basically our age. And when it's just four high school's senior classes, the park is empty, dude. Like you can go instantly on every ride you want to.
Yeah.
And there's very few people around. It's very weird.
And it's at night. It's dark.
It's at night.
It's shadows strange. And shit.
It's cool, but it's strange, and the atmosphere is different. And we went on the Jungle Cruise, and the guy leading the Jungle Cruise, which is a nice touchstone for atmospheric storytelling, started out as like a fun adventure ride of check out all these cool animatronics, which were like crazy and new at the time, and then devolved into we're not changing anything. We're just changing the way we talk about the animatronics. Wherein the captains of the boat that you ride around the Jungle Cruise would basically make fun of the whole ride, and that's the ride. You get on, and they just mock the whole thing. And it's funny. Like, it's a funny experience, but it's very different. And I admire that. I admire their the deftness with which they took the environment and twisted it into something totally different, right?
Yeah. Anyway, I guess it opens up the avenue for these cast members to become a comedian.
Oh, totally.
You got to write their own jokes, too. You know, I'm sure they have to submit their jokes, obviously. They can't just improv. No, maybe they do a little improv. I don't know. But
yeah, there's a little. So there was lots of improv this night. This guy, he did not give a fuck about the jokes. He told a couple of them, but he mostly just implied that he wanted to get a blowjob.
What the fuck? Okay.
Yeah. And, it was weird, dude.
Was he an older guy or is he?
No, he was like 17.
Oh, okay. Probably.
So they're like, he implied that he was lonely. And then, and it was funny and weird. And then the shrunken heads come around and he's like, he says something to the effect of, this guy's got a lot of heads. Anybody? I could use some head.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that hurts. I can't believe
you fucking said that.
Holy shit.